Blog Talk Radio.
Blog Talk Radio.
This is AppSats Radio, help for partners after sexual betrayal. We talk about it here.
Betrayal trauma.
We are AppSats certified clinical partner specialists and coaches who have been trained to help navigate you through this crisis. There is nothing we won't talk about.
Sometimes listeners want to know about triggers.
I'm dealing with the aftermath of my husband's affairs, and he still works the same job that he did when he was acting out. It's a job that allows him to hide his goings-on and one that he stated was a previous trigger for his acting out. The whole 16 and a half years we've been together, he's acted out. In the beginning, what I thought it was just pornography. It ended up being, I found out 2.5 years ago, he had been with multiple prostitutes. I only found out a very small portion of that until about a month ago. How do you cope with all of that when you still have to deal with unavoidable triggers?
Well, of course you would feel traumatized by hearing all that information. And I got to tell you, Stephanie, that's a staggered disclosure. That's finding out little bits and pieces about your husband's behavior throughout a time period, making you feel insecure, unsure, and unsafe. So what we got to do is set up a situation whereby you get with a specialist to do a formal disclosure so you can hear everything at one time in a safe environment. That
is absolutely right. A safe environment. That's what we want partners to have. Right? Hi there. I'm Carol Jurgensen Sheets, a.k.a. Carol the Coach. And we have dedicated ourselves to making you feel safe, and that's through AppSats.org. Now, if you go to appsats.org, you will find a clinician or a coach that's partner-sensitive that can help work you through the kinds of issues that you need to go through to get to the other side. That's the truth of the matter. And that's why I'm so excited about who I'm going to be interviewing today. Dr. Jill Manning just announced that she has a variety of digital downloads that offer therapeutic handouts and worksheets specifically designed for betrayed partners. And I wanted her to talk about these, and I had hoped that if you're working with a clinician or a coach, you can tell your professional, hey, I would like for you to get some of these grounding tools. Because the truth of the matter is, she has done an amazing job of assessing what partners need. Now, when she did that, through a variety of ways, and she has done lots and lots of surveys in this community. She's one of the founding members of Partner Sensitivity. She was on the AppSats board for almost its entire existence, and she knew that it would be helpful if partners could have grounding skills and if they could be able to access psychoeducation to help explain what was happening to them. And so she came up with, you know, tools for explaining betrayal trauma and, gosh, a safety inventory for betrayed partners. You need to go to her website, JillManning.com. Dr. Jill Manning, I think it's actually what it is. DrJillManning.com. And look at the materials that she has put together. And she's written books. She was one of the first psychologists to talk about the issues with digital acting out. And so, I mean, she's really been an incredible resource in the field. She wants betrayed partners to understand how to manage their triggers and what they can do to use anger effectively. And Ethan has something called circle work for betrayed partners, which you've all probably heard of the three circles for addicts. Well, she has a system set up to help partners to determine, if you will, if they are doing healthy things for themselves. And then, last but not least, she has 125 self-care items so that you know how to take care of yourself. Now, many of her tools are for licensed and certified mental health providers and coaches who work with betrayed partners, but you know what? They're also for individuals who are healing from betrayed trauma. So I would encourage you, while you're listening to the show, to go on her website, again, Dr. Jill Manning, and take a look at these resources. And then we're going to be talking to her about why she developed these and how is it affecting people and just about her wealth of knowledge in general. I remember I read Oprah from cover to cover. And I saw just a very insightful article where Jill and Kevin Skinner were talking about partner trauma. And so I love when the general public finds out more about what I consider to be episodic. I mean, it's epidemic. It's pandemic. And that's sex addiction and the trauma it leads. Now, I don't know what's going on. Maybe it's because it's going to be a full moon. But I got two emails today. If you got the little ones in the room, I know most of you listen to this stuff when you're doing the dishes and you've got your pods in and people can't necessarily hear it. But go ahead and escort them out because we're going to be talking a little bit about sex. I got two emails and they said, please help, Carol. So I said, of course I will, if I can. The first email I got was from a partner who said, my husband is 12 years older than me and we've been married for 7 years. He has a history and I'm trying to determine if we would call this sexual addiction. Over the years, from time to time, he has asked me to do numerous sexual things for him or asked to take videos or asked me to please myself. And one very harsh thing I hold inside is that several years ago in his previous marriage, he had inappropriately touched his stepdaughter. So the truth of the matter is, Carol, that I am not comfortable with his requests. I don't know. I see them as deviant. And then I found out that he had touched his stepdaughter inappropriately. And I'm thinking to myself, does this guy have a sex addiction? Okay, she says, as she goes on, she said, he does watch pornography and it really hurts me. And it wasn't just normal pornography. And I told him, you know, I'm your fourth marriage and I don't want a police officer to show up at our door. He's not a mean person. As a matter of fact, he goes above and beyond to be a kind, caring man. But when it comes to sex, it's like he has no boundaries, and I end up feeling the brunt of that. What do you think? Well, you know I'm a certified sexual addiction therapist, and what I know first and foremost is that I can't answer that kind of a question based on an email. He needs to be evaluated by somebody who understands sexual addiction. And that would be a CSAT, a Certified Sexual Addictions Therapist. So I would encourage you to go to sexhelp.com and get that kind of help from him, for him. And I would ask to be a part of it. You know, it used to be the partners weren't allowed to come into the sessions, and they were actually, it was discouraged. But as we gain more partner sensitivity, I encourage my partners to absolutely inquire about, am I going to be seen with my husband so I can share my concerns? You know, this is a relational issue as well as potentially a recovery issue. I don't know if he's just being insensitive to your needs as a wife to continue to want you to do things you're uncomfortable with, but I do know that you need to seek somebody who can help you to assert yourself, to maintain those boundaries, and perhaps create them if you don't have them. Now, you said that he watches pornography and that unfortunately, it makes you uncomfortable, that it's not the normal porn. And I don't know what that is. But what I do know to be true is that if you're uncomfortable about a type of pornography he's using, then you need to see a partner-sensitive therapist who can help do some couples work with you. You know, while they're deciding if he has a sex addiction, it is okay to meet with somebody, and maybe you just go by yourself, you know, to figure out how to handle this very tough situation. Last but not least, I do believe that if he has molested his stepdaughter in the past, that can be a type of sex addiction, but not necessarily. So that certified sex addiction therapist should help you with that too. So thank you for writing in. It sounds like you got your hands full, and I can really appreciate the fact that he's got to get healthy. All right. And keep me posted on your situation, for sure. I want to know how you're doing. You're not alone. Go to appsats.org and find somebody that you can talk to. If there's not somebody right there in your state, close to your city, there are people that can work with you virtually, and that can make all the difference in the world. So now I've been introducing you to some of Dr. Jill Manning's work, and I have her on the phone. And I just want to say, Dr. Jill, these resources are amazing that you are offering partially to partners and to the therapists and coaches that want to help do good trauma work and partner sensitivity with clients. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I'm not kidding you. This is good stuff. So can you tell me a little bit about how you got into this field and then how it evolved into these very beautiful, understandable resources?
Sure. Well, I have been involved in partner-related work for almost 23 years. It's hard to believe. And this was the heart and soul of my doctoral studies. So I've done primary research in this area as well. And it's been a passion. It's really a labor of love and passion of mine for most of my adult life. How these resources evolved is I saw a need for quality partner-sensitive resources that were in bite-sized pieces. Sometimes if, you know, I was noticing in my own clients and even myself when I've gone through things that are overwhelming or really intense, being given a workbook or an entire book sometimes just feels like, where do I begin? It can be overwhelming. So the idea behind the digital downloads was to provide on-point quality resources that were easy to use and could be integrated into personal self-improvement work, 12-step work, or clinical work and coaching work too. So that was the idea behind it. Carol?
Yes, I was saying that I really want to talk about the whole host of tools that you offer. I mean, some of them are psychoeducational. Some of them are assessment. Some of them go into self-care. So what made you decide to offer the variety that you did?
Great question. And there's more coming. You know, this is an evolving work. And so the range of topics currently offered is not finished. There will be more topics. So what the initial offering of resources that's on the digital download page are really some of my favorite topics. They're things that I regularly work with my own clients, things that I've seen a need for in the field where we just, again, have a manageable piece of work that someone can take home, work on over a period of, you know, a week or several weeks or take to a group. There are also resources and topics that are regularly focused on in my group therapy work with betrayed partners. So safety, you'll notice there's resources and in inventories around safety because that's the first pillar of healing when we've been betrayed is establishing safety and planning in a guided, thoughtful way. What does increasing my safety look like? So I really started with some of those initial pieces of healing work for betrayed partners, and then it'll continue to build out.
And, you know, I can really appreciate the fact that these can be wonderful exercises for groups of partners or trauma survivors. I mean, truly, you're dealing with trauma here, and what I know to be true is that they do want safety and stabilization initially, and then when they get to feeling safe and stable, then they got to do the hard work of expressing their anger, their grief, and their mourning. And those are all stages that both Judith Herman talks about when she talks about trauma, and FSAX talks about in their multidimensional partner training model. And so I love the fact that you have a resource on anger. Tell us a little bit about that.
Sure. Anger is one of my favorite topics. I know that sounds strange and weird, but it is because I think anger is so misunderstood and misused in our culture. And years ago, Carol, when I was really a rookie therapist, I'm from Canada. I was in Calgary, Alberta, and I was given an assignment at one of the community health clinics there to run what was called anger management. A group for anger management. And it was primarily males. Some of them wanted to be there. Most of them did not. And I look back and I think, you know, there was a lot of good content in those groups and that approach. But having worked now over two decades in therapeutic work and living my own life as well, I think managing anger is a misguided approach. It's well-intentioned, but I don't think it's effective. What I think is more effective and more in line with how humans tick is using anger as a signal and a message and learning good skills for how do I harness what anger is telling me. And most often, anger is telling us that a boundary has been violated. There's been some agreement, promise, vow, covenant, belief, expectation, something has gone awry in that area. And unless we can become mindful and aware of what exactly was crossed or violated, what do I need? How do I feel? We really cut off the effectiveness of being able to let emotions move us to a healthier, stronger, more resilient place. And it also cuts off intimacy. If I can't learn how to use anger to communicate who I am, what I need, what my limits are, it stifled my ability to really have meaningful connection with other people.
Well, I absolutely agree. I just finished a trauma workbook for partner-sensitive coaches and clinicians to help work through anger. And, you know, one of the things I know is that the old anger management groups taught people how to reduce it or how to prevent it, but they didn't talk about how what it was doing for them, how it might have been protecting them or telling them something that they needed to change either about their environment or even themselves. Now, with partners, mm-hmm. what I really believe is that anger is normal, natural, and necessary, and once they can express it and feel safe, then they can move into some of the other stages of grief so that they can get to post-traumatic growth. So I love the fact that you've got these tools, and I also like that you are very comfortable with what anger has to teach us. And so was that an easy resource to develop?
It's developed over time. It's developed really in the crucible of being in the trench with and linking arms with people that are enraged with what's happened in their lives and understandably so. And just really some of it through observation, trial and error, including in my own life, of how do we harness this for good? Because I believe those emotions are by design. They're not wrong. They're not bad. They're there for a purpose. And it's up to us to open ourselves up to what that purpose is and how do we harness it through assertiveness, through defining who we are, honoring our worth as people, and working our boundary work. You know, often I observe, Carol, I don't know what you see in your work on this topic, but I see anger almost always tied in with boundary violations. And so if someone's mm-hmm. feeling wobbly with, well, what is a boundary? How do I set a boundary? Or how do I speak my truth? If they struggle in those areas, there's likely going to be a lot of anger. Now, conversely, when I see people that don't feel enough anger, that often can be a sign, too, of struggles around self-worth and not feeling enough value. Because I believe one of the mantras in my groups is we protect what we value. So when we really value ourselves, our marriage, our family, we will feel angry when those boundaries are violated or trampled on. And if we don't, we often are not feeling enough. Maybe we're in a trauma freeze or we're numbed out. It's gone on for so long and we felt so powerless that we're not feeling enough anger. So no. Those are really topics we delve into deeply in the groups that I run because feeling mm-hmm. too much or too little are both problematic in living a full, rich life.
Well, and I don't know about you, Dr. Jill, but I'm telling you that the number one question I get asked more than anything is about what are healthy boundaries? What expectations should I have? What do mm-hmm. I do? And you did this a resource, and it's under educational material, and it's 11 responses to boundary mm-hmm. violations. And I love that because truly, it's not like women want to take on somebody else's boundaries, but so often as children, we weren't taught how to have healthy boundaries. And so when our rights, our values get violated, it really becomes difficult to know if the boundary should be considered acceptable. Is it too extreme? Is it not enough? And of course, not only coming up with a boundary, but a consequence if the boundary continues to be violated. So, go ahead.
Well, I'm in full agreement with what you're saying, just what a struggle and wrestle that is. And this resource came to exist because I saw so many people that were really working hard, Carol, on and doing, in many cases, excellent boundary work, but then things would fall apart when the boundary they had worked so hard to identify and implement was then violated. So I saw a need for how do we shore up people that are doing good boundary work? They're working the work, but then it's violated again. And so this document, 11 Responses to Boundary Violations, was born out of that need, you know, to arm people with some strategies and insight and reflective questions of what's going on when there's a boundary that's violated.
Yeah, and you know, again, I've had more requests for shows about boundaries because I think after a partner has been traumatized by the betrayal, her brain isn't necessarily working as well as it could be. That's trauma brain. The executive functioning has been affected. And they want some help. They feel so alone in all this. Now, that being said, I certainly work with partners that are 2 and 3 years into it, and perhaps the sex addict is doing good work, but you and I both know that can still mean that they have occasional slips, almost putting them back into that first stage of needing safety and stabilization again. And those boundaries might look a little bit different than the stage one boundaries for somebody who just discovered about the betrayal. So I can see that you assessed what people needed most and then put together, gosh, how many of these tools are there? I'm seeing 3, 6, 9, 12?
I think
12,
there's 12 right now. And then there's also free printables. There's some, I work quite a bit in volunteer work and advocacy for internet safety. And so there's several free printables to help families and parents, you know, shore things up at home to prevent some of the very issues we deal with that are so traumatizing.
And so that's what I wanted to encourage people. Before you came on the call, I told them that obviously your website is your name, Dr. Jill Manning, with two N's, .com. And then you do have some free resources for people, although I'm not allowed to speak money on the podcast, but I got to tell our listening audience, whether you're a coach, a clinician, or a partner, these resources that she is charging for are super affordable, and they're beautiful, and, you know, you can have them printed out and laminated, and they'd just be wonderful for an office or wonderful for your group. You know, I have people that have brought in resources that were laminated and showed everybody. You know, I did that with the recovery task, 30 recovery task diagram, because I found it so helpful for people. So are people allowed to share their resources with other people? What can they do here?
Are you referring specifically to the resources on my website? Are they allowed to share them?
Yes, the freebies, yeah.
Got it. So the free printables, yes. Those, in truth, are already available online in various places. What I did was curate and put them in one spot, some of my favorite resources that I've used regularly, either in my own family or with clients. And so I wanted them to be easier to find. You know, when I mentioned it in group, for instance, I wanted to make it easier for clients and colleagues to, oh, okay, I can find that on this page. So yes, people are welcome to share, print or forward copies of the free resources. What I do ask is for the resources where there is a nominal fee, those can be used repeatedly individually. You know, if I purchase, for instance, 11 responses to boundary violations, I could print off as many copies as I wanted to use in my own personal work if I was an individual, a betrayed individual. If I'm a coach or a clinician, you pay for that one time, and you can use that with any of your own clients. What I ask for copyright and, you know, out of respect for the resources and time and effort that's gone into creating them is that a coach or clinician not share them with other peers or colleagues, that they just share them with their own clients.
Right. And then the other clinicians and coaches can be instructed to go to your website and get them too, purchase them also. That is available. You don't have to be working with partners specifically to be able to utilize the resources you have here. Would you agree?
Correct. Absolutely. So if there was, let's say, a certified sex addiction therapist that may not specialize or work specifically with partners but wanted some to have some of these resources to help educate a sex addict in recovery, that is completely appropriate and would be helpful.
So will you share a little bit about your circle work for betrayed partners? Because so many of our partners know that their husbands are doing circle work. And, you know, 20 years ago, after Patrick Carnes had created that circle work for Sex Addicts Anonymous, when a partner wanted to know what a husband's circle work was, she was told to work on her own side of the street, and that was his own recovery, and that was not her business, right?
Right. I remember those days.
Yes, and things have changed, and although sometimes change is slow, and so I'm always telling my partners and my addicts, go back to your group and say, well, you're talking my recovery, but I also believe in relational recovery, and I think my wife should get to know what my three circles are so that she knows when she's safe. Now, you've got circle work for betrayed partners, so can you just say a little bit about that? Did you come up with that idea?
I certainly can't claim it as me being the first person to do circle work with partners, but what I saw a need for, because I am a licensed marriage and family therapist, so the relational piece is important to me. Even when I'm working with an individual, I'm thinking systemically about how that work is landing in a family and in a marriage. For many years, Carol, I'll be honest and say I steered away from circle work with partners because I did not want to make what I call a false equivalency between addiction recovery and healing from betrayal. And you and I both know that if an addict's not in good recovery and there's a lot of gaslighting, they're desperate to get on even playing field with their partner. Well, you have faults too. You need to do this as well and try to even this out. It's lopsided. Mm-hmm. When there's been an egregious betrayal, that is, it's not 50-50. It's lopsided. There's an imbalance. However, I really saw benefit for partners healing from betrayal to have a place where they could consolidate all of the ideas, affirmations, tools that they were working on in their groups or 12-step or individual therapy, and use circle work as a way to organize that on one page, right? Because as you mentioned, trauma brain, when there's a lot of disorder and chaos, it's just difficult. So the circle work was, one, a way to organize and consolidate all the good work that the partner was doing. But secondly, it also gave a common language for couples that were in a good place in recovery, not early recovery, but in a good place where they could share respectfully what they were both working on without that being weaponized, right? So for circle work for a partner, the outer circle, which I call the green circle, green for go. We want that. It's a good thing. And it's purposely the largest circle because that's where we want most of our living to occur. We want that to be the dominant place we live and hang out in. That's the place all the good grounding tools, coping strategies, affirmations, and recovery principles and ideas, we want them to be recorded so they can be remembered. The middle circle is that tricky area where at face value it may not seem problematic, but it's easily a setup for our inner circle, or what I call the red circle, the stop zone, the area we're trying to avoid. Now, that for some betrayed partners may be addictive behavior. For most, though, that I work with, it's not necessarily addiction they're avoiding, but it may be actions that are opposite of their healing goal. So how I use circle work in group is I have all the group members identify what is your healing goal and what's one word that summarizes that. So words like balance, peace, health, safety, those are common words that I'll hear. So they'll write that at the top of their circle. Then all of the green, the outer circle, we want those things to support that goal. The inner circle, the red circle, are going to be the behaviors that are contrary to that goal, that pull us in the opposite direction. And the middle circle are the things that make us wobbly and vulnerable to getting really quickly to that inner circle. So you'll notice there's a lot of similarities, more similarities than differences, really, with the CSAT circle model. But I've adjusted that for partners to give them a common language when checking in with in their marriage, their relationship, but also a place to consolidate good healing work.
Well, and it's such a nice reminder of what could use some continuing tweaking versus all the things that are going really well in one's life. Because let's face it, part of good partner betrayal work is giving the partner through those three phases, again, safety and stabilization and anger, grief, and mourning, and then over there to post-traumatic growth. But it's also getting the partner to really focus on herself so that she can feel like she has some control again. And that creates a lot of serenity, and that's what I see this three circles work doing. I'm curious about your check-in for couples. You know, if there's one thing that my couples say, especially the partner, is that check-ins help so much, but he loses the initiative to make those happen. And of course, most partners are looking for him to continue to work hard and show effort. And so you have some check-in formats that are pretty easy, right?
Yes. So again, being a marriage and family therapist, I want to support good couple healing and recovery as well. Check-ins is one tool that we use in this work to start building bridges and provide some containment for tough conversations and to build accountability and connection. But you're absolutely right. I'm glad you bring up this idea that, you know, sometimes that can start off really well and then drop off. And it's important that we look at what are the barriers, what's preventing follow through and consistency with that. Similar with boundary work, Carol, I always want to uncover and examine what are the barriers, things that are holding people back from following through with good boundary work. So with check-ins, one of the most common things that I hear people say, in fact, I heard a husband this week say, when asked, why aren't check-ins happening consistently, he basically said, because they turn into event session. You know, he feels emotionally beat up during these. Mm-hmm. Or what commonly happens that people have a hard time identifying is they have what I call, or what Pia Melody refers to as a shame attack. You know, really talking about anything related to this topic can really bring on a lot of shame. So the idea of very structured, formatted check-ins has a number of purposes, but one of them is to provide containment. It's also predictability. Both parties know what's coming, what the format is. It provides a lot of steadiness to tough conversations, if people will follow it, right? So what I've done in my document entitled Five Check-In Formats for Couples Healing from Sexual Betrayal is I've just consolidated my favorite check-in formats, and there's a lot of range. There's highly structured, like, for example, Thanos, which is one of the most common in the field. One of my favorites is the vowel check. That's vowel, like consonants and vowels, like with the alphabet, and that's A-E-I-O-U, sometimes Y. And so that stands for checking in with abstinence or sobriety. Exercise is the E. Eye care, basically self-care for the eye. other care, something we've done for someone else, including our partner. U is the unexpressed emotion or need we may be feeling that day. And Y is the yay for the day, something we're affirming or celebrating. That's one of my favorites that I just don't hear of as commonly as Thanos, and it works really well. But some couples like more flexibility with a check-in, and therefore I have a list of 31 questions that are really on point with betrayal healing that a couple could say, let's choose two of these questions and we'll answer these questions each week, or we could pull them randomly. Each week we'll choose one or take turns choosing one, and then next month we'll, you know, change the format. So sometimes some variety, some novelty can be good, especially for couples that are in longer term healing. So that was the thinking behind giving different formats. So there's choice, and that people don't feel locked into something that may not be working for them or that they've outgrown. But the idea
right.
of having consistent communication that's contained and provides good boundaries for tough topics is so important. And so however a couple chooses to do that, I like to build, you know, that choice and that empowerment in that, because I find it's more successful when people do.
Well, and what I love about it is, again, it does offer choice. And sometimes doing the same thing over and over again, even if it works, feels stale. And so you give lots
yeah.
of different opportunities to do this kind of work. And you and I both know that partners say it's so important to get to hear how their spouse is doing with their recovery or just with their feelings in general.
Yeah.
I'm such a big believer in the development of empathy. And empathy is a hard skill to learn if you've never been able to do it, especially when you're in the doghouse, or you do feel like it's easy for you to go into a shame cycle. And so I'm looking forward to seeing some more product categories like empathy and maybe, because you're just a master at this. For anybody who hasn't gotten to see her work yet, the minute you get on her site, you are at peace. There is a gentleness. There is serenity, and you go, okay, I cannot wait to see what these resources are all about. And each resource is really incredibly well done in that it definitely connotes a sense of peace, serenity, flow. And, you know, that's the opposite of how so many partners feel in their life. So it's a nice metaphor just looking at them to be able to know that it's going to bring a sense of confidence and a sense of capability. I can see that you've done just a really good job. And again, that's through going to her website, Dr. Jill Manning, that's JillManning, .com, and looking at her resources page. I would be remiss if I let you go before I asked you about your other products. Now, I was telling my listening audience before you came on that you were talking about partner betrayal in Oprah with Kevin Skinner, right?
Yes.
I mean, what a good gig to get. You, I'm sure, had so many people that were exposed for the first time to what this is called. You know, they feel like their husband's cheating, but they don't know that it's partner or sexual betrayal. Can you talk a little bit about the books and the CDs that you have for partners and kids?
Sure.
And families.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Carol. And yes, the Oprah interview was a real highlight. That was really a treat. And there's quite a backstory behind that, but the nutshell version of that is that the woman, the author of that article, had not clearly landed on betrayal trauma being the subject. That it was kind of an all-over-the-place topic initially, and it was through a four-part interview that, in talking, she was able to see how critical betrayal trauma specifically was. And when they brought up betrayal trauma in the editing department of the Oprah magazine, almost everyone in the editing room said, I can relate to that. We need to run with that topic. So it was through, you know, just discussion and education about this topic, just like what you're doing, you know, with this amazing radio program. People resonate with this. They get it. They know someone or it's happened to them. So that was an interesting process in and of itself of just having the author come around to this topic and be so, she did really a beautiful job on it. The other items on the site are related to projects I've been involved with over many years. So I wrote my own book on pornography in 2008. I wanted a resource that was appropriate for teenagers and especially younger teenagers. So many of the books and websites on pornography I felt were very risky or developmentally inappropriate. I had come out of working in an inpatient program that was for male adolescents. Almost all of them had struggled with pornography use, and I could not find resources that were developmentally appropriate. They were either too graphic or way over their heads. And so I wrote the book, What's the Big Deal About Pornography? With that population in mind and with parents in mind. And then other books on there, you know, are projects I've been invited and have been blessed to be a part of. So that's, yeah, a real variety.
Yes, that is something else. And I'm telling you, you know, you have a special place in your heart for the LDS community. Can you tell our listening audience why?
Well, I am a member of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, and so I've been really fortunate to be involved in conferences and projects and also consultation with the church. So it's really been a highlight of my work to be able to help in that community, that faith community, with ideas that I use in my clinical work every day, but, you know, kind of translate those and make those applicable to specific faith communities. With that said, Carol, I've consulted and spoken in Jewish communities, Muslim communities, Catholic. I've done a lot of work with my fellow Catholic colleagues and peers, and just really, you know, there's such a strong spiritual thread to recovery and to healing. And so I think it's not by coincidence or accident that many faith communities are deeply concerned about these topics and are grappling with how to approach them. And so it's been my great privilege and honor to link arms with a variety of faiths to bring resources forward.
Well, and just to give a shout out to the LDS community, I would agree with you that more and more churches and spiritual platforms are getting on board with how epidemic this is. But the LDS community has for a long time really embraced sexual addiction and partner betrayal and how it devastates the family. And they probably have more videos than any other religion out there on this topic. So a shout out to them for, again, exposing people to the kind of betrayal that occurs and the kind of shame that occurs. You know, we are very much advocates for partners, but we're also advocates for sex addicts and how they can get help and get into recovery. So Jill Manning, I just want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for putting this all together, and I want you to keep us posted. There's nothing. One thing I know about partners is they are hungry for resources and information. So thank you so very much.
Thank you, Carol, for your tremendous work and contributions and for your patience with me. I know it took us a while to get your stars aligned to make this happen today, but thank you. This really was a privilege and treat.
Oh, absolutely. I feel the same. You make it a great week.
Likewise, Carol. Take good care and stay safe.
You too. And again, that was Dr. Jill Manning. Go to her website, drjillmanning.com, and take a look at these resources. Amazing. All right, we're at the end of our show, and I want to thank you for being a part of it every single week. As I say at the end, and I think you could recite it with me, there will only be one of you at all times, so fearlessly, please have the courage to be yourself. We'll see you next week for more Betrayal Recovery Radio.
For more information, go to APSATS.org, the Association of Partners of Sex Addicts Trauma Specialists, to find a professional in your area who is trained to help you after sexual betrayal.